Hey everyone, welcome back. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Today, we're heading to 1980s New Orleans for a legal battle over fish fry and chick fry. It all started with Zatarain's.
Oh yeah, Zatarain's, famous for spices and those batter mixes. They ran into trouble when competitors started using, well, fish fry and chicken fry on their own products.
Right. Now, Zatarain's had been using fish fry since 1950 and chick fry since 68. They even registered those as trademarks.
Mm-hmm.
But then companies like Oak Grove Smokehouse and Visco's Fish Fry came along, used those same phrases on their batter mixes. Zatarain's was not happy about that. They decided to sue.
This case really dives into trademark law. It's fascinating. Imagine trademarks as a ladder.
Okay, a ladder. I like it.
At the bottom, the very bottom, you got generic terms, aspirin, tissue, things like that. Anyone can use them because they describe the product itself.
Right. You can't trademark the word tissue and stop everyone else from using it.
Exactly. Now, climb up a rung and you get to descriptive terms like vision center for an eyeglass store. It describes what they do, but it's not like inherently unique.
Okay, so the descriptive terms.
Now, these can be trademarked, but only if they gain what's called secondary meaning.
Secondary meaning. What does that mean?
It means consumers associate that term so strongly with a specific brand, it goes beyond just describing the product. Like, think Kleenex.
Yeah.
You don't just think facial tissue, right? Mm-hmm. You picture that specific brand, that secondary meaning.
Gotcha. Okay, so those descriptive terms need that extra oomph to be protected.
Huh.
What about climbing even higher on that ladder? What's next?
Ah, then we get to suggestive terms. These need a little imagination to connect them to the product. Copper tone for suntan lotion is a good example.
Right. Hints at a tan, but doesn't literally describe the lotion itself.
Yep. And finally, at the top of our trademark ladder, we have, well, there's two, arbitrary or fanciful terms. These have no relation to the product whatsoever, like Exxon for gasoline or Kodak for cameras. They're just inherently distinctive and get automatic trademark protection.
So the big question in this case is, where do fish-free and chick-free fit on that ladder? I mean, that's what this whole legal battle was about.
Exactly. Zatarain's argued, said these were suggestive terms, deserved automatic protection, but Oak Grove and Visco's, they claimed they were either generic, meaning anyone could use them, or simply descriptive, needing that secondary meaning we talked about.
So how did the court figure this out?
Well, they used four tests. First, they looked at the dictionary definition of fish fry.
Makes sense.
If it simply refers to a cooking method, leans towards descriptive. And wouldn't you know it, Webster's defines it as both a picnic where fish is fried and just plain, you know, fried fish.
Not looking great for Zatarain's so far. What's next?
Next is the imagination test. Does fish fry require you to, you know, use your imagination to understand what it's used for? Probably not. Most people would assume it's for coating fish before frying, even if they've never seen the product.
Right, so that points towards descriptive too.
It does. Then there's the competitor need test. Would other companies selling batter mixes need to use fish fry to describe their products? That one's trickier, but the court, well, they lean towards yes. It's a straightforward way to describe what the batter's for.
Okay, three tests down. What's the last one?
Last is the actual use test. Have other companies besides Zatarain's used fish fry on their products? And the answer was a resounding yes. We know about Oak Grove and Visco's already, but others like Arnaud's and Golden Dipped use the term too.
So based on those four tests, the court decided fish fry is indeed a descriptive term, not suggestive. But remember we talked about descriptive terms needing that secondary meaning boost to get trademark protection? Well, Zatarain's had some arguments there.
Yeah, at least when it came to New Orleans.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, they've been using fish-free for decades in New Orleans, put a lot of money into advertising, and their sales figures were consistently increasing. They even had these two surveys they commissioned, specifically asked New Orleans women who frequently fried seafood about their preferred powder mix.
Interesting. And what did those surveys say?
Well, a significant percentage, somewhere between 23 and 28%, specifically named Zatarain's Fish Fry.
So Zatarain's was winning.
Yeah.
But you said at least when it came to New Orleans. What does that mean?
It means that while this evidence pointed towards fish free having secondary meaning in New Orleans, it didn't necessarily apply everywhere else.
Ah, okay. So even with secondary meaning, competitors might still be able to use the term.
You're absolutely right. There's a legal defense called fair use that can come into play. It allows competitors to use descriptive terms truthfully, as long as they aren't, you know, trying to mislead customers or piggyback on someone else's brand recognition.
I see. Like using the term smartphone, even though Apple has a trademark on iPhone, you're describing a type of product, not infringing on a specific brand. So how did fair use play into this case?
Well, Oak Grove and Visco's genuinely seem to believe fish fry was, you know, a generic term, not trying to trick anyone. They hadn't even tried to trademark themselves. Plus, their packaging and branding were different enough from Zatarain's to avoid customer confusion.
So even though Zatarain's proved fish fry had that secondary meaning in New Orleans, Oak Grove and Visco's could still use fish fry because of this fair use defense.
Exactly. The court found Oak Grove and Visco's weren't trying to deceive anyone, and their products were clearly different from Zatarain's. That's a crucial point about trademark law. It's about protecting brands while also allowing fair competition.
So that's fish fry. What about Chick-fil-A? Surely that was more straightforward.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But for Zatarain's, the Chick-fil-A case took a turn for the worse.
Uh-oh. What happened?
The court saw Chick-fil-A, well, they saw it just like fish-free as descriptive, not suggestive, and Zatarain's couldn't prove secondary meaning this time.
Really? What about those surveys they used for fish-free? Did they try those again?
They did, but the surveys were designed for, you know, for fish fry, not chicken.
Ah, so not as strong evidence for Chick-fil-A.
Exactly. Plus, Zatarain's hadn't spent nearly as much on advertising Chick-fil-A. Far fewer people in New Orleans associated it with, you know, with Zatarain's compared to fish-free.
So they lost their case against Oak Grove and Visco's.
Yep.
And the court actually canceled their Chick-fil-A trademark registration.
Wow. It makes you think, right? Maybe if they'd focused on building a really distinct brand for Chick-fil-A like they did with fish-free in New Orleans, the outcome might have been different.
Yeah. This whole case shows how important choosing the right brand name is. I'm definitely coming to you for legal advice if I ever start a business.
Anytime. But hold on. We're not done yet. Oak Grove and Visco's didn't just defend themselves. They went on the attack, too.
Oh, right. The counterclaims. They accused Zatarain's of, like, trying to monopolize the batter mix market, being unfair to competitors, even misleading customers with their labeling.
They did. But here's where evidence comes in again. They couldn't actually back up their claims, so the court dismissed them. Remember how Zatarain's had strong evidence for fish-free? Well, Oak Grove and Visco's just didn't have that same level of proof for their accusations.
So, big takeaway from this whole fish-free and chick-free saga. Choosing the right name for your product is crucial.
It is. And think about those trademark categories we talked about. Generic, descriptive, suggestive, arbitrary. Where would your name fall?
If it's descriptive, I'd need to really build up that secondary meaning like Zatarain's did with fish-free, right? Lots of advertising, strong branding, and a product that stands out.
Exactly. But even then, don't forget about fair use. Competitors can still use descriptive terms if they're being honest and not trying to, you know, steal your brand's thunder.
It's about finding a balance, protecting trademarks while allowing for fair competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this might seem like a niche legal battle over fried food, but it really affects everyone. We're all consumers. We interact with trademarks every single day.
That's true. Trademark law impacts everyone. Entrepreneurs, artists, musicians, anyone who creates something unique and wants to protect it.
And it's not just big companies. It's small businesses, online creators, even folks selling crafts on Etsy. Trademark law is relevant to all of them.
It's really about fostering creativity and innovation while ensuring a level playing field. And courts are always trying to find that balance.
Something that struck me is how trademark law is always evolving. What was suggestive in the 1980s might be seen as just plain descriptive now. Language changes, and so do consumer perceptions. Plus, there's technology to consider, too.
Oh, yeah. Think about terms like escalator or yo-yo. Those were brand names once, but they became so common they lost their trademark protection. That's something to keep in mind, you know, when choosing a brand name. Will it stand the test of time?
It really makes you think about the brands you see every day and all the work that goes into protecting them.
Speaking of thinking, I have a question for our listeners.
Ooh, I love these. Hit us with it.
All right. Imagine you're starting a food company today, specializing in, let's say, a revolutionary new kind of vegan burger.
Okay, vegan burger company. Got it. What kind of name should I choose?
That's the question. What kind of name maximizes your chances of trademark protection? Would you go for something descriptive, maybe highlighting the ingredients or the health benefits?
Tempting, but like we learned, it might be harder to protect down the road.
Exactly. What about a suggestive term that makes people curious? Or even something totally arbitrary, a brand new word that's inherently distinctive?
So many choices. Catchy, memorable, but also legally protected. This whole discussion has been so insightful.
It's a real balancing act. It shows how crucial strategic thinking is when it comes to branding and trademarks.
I've learned so much today. Trademark law is way more complex and interesting than I ever realized.
And remember, this is just a taste. There's so much more to explore.
Well, I can't wait to dive into another legal rabbit hole with you. But for now, let's wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive.
Thanks for joining us.
You know, it's funny. This case has got me thinking. Fish Free and Chick Free. Those names were coined, what, like 40, 50 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Back then, they probably sounded a lot more unique.
Yeah, probably. But language is constantly changing, right? Shaped by how people use words, cultural trends, all that.
Today, with so many brands out there, it feels like it'd be really tough to come up with a truly distinctive name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you even stand out?
That's why it's so important to think long term. When choosing a brand name, think, how will this be perceived in 5 years? 10, even 50. Will it hold up or will it become, you know, just another word?
Like what happened to aspirin and escalator, right? Once brand names, now just generic terms.
Exactly. So if you're creating a brand today, think about its future. Will it stay fresh or will it fade into the background?
Another thing that struck me is how much context matters. Remember how Zatarain's Fish Free had that strong secondary meaning in New Orleans?
Mm-hmm.
But that protection didn't automatically apply everywhere else.
Very true. When building a brand, you gotta consider your audience, your market. What works in one place might not work somewhere else.
And trademark law itself, it's always changing too. New technologies, new ways of doing business, consumer behaviors. It's a lot to keep up with.
Absolutely. Think about the digital age, online marketplaces, social media. How do you even protect your brand in that world? Those are questions legal experts are dealing with right now.
It makes you wonder, how will trademark law even look in the future?
Oh, it'll definitely evolve. And the answers are going to shape how brands are created, protected, and how we interact with them as consumers.
This whole deep dive has definitely made me way more aware of all the thought and strategy that goes into building and protecting a brand.
It's not just picking a catchy name, that's for sure.
You got to understand the law, your long-term goals, and be ready to adapt, because the world of business and technology is always changing.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, I've learned a ton today. Thank you so much for taking us on this journey through the world of trademarks. It's been fascinating.
My pleasure. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining us on The Deep Dive. Until next time.